Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our show with guest Nick Dunham, talking mainly about daily fantasy sports betting, was pre-taped a few weeks ago. Just before we're posting this online, Rich and I are going to go in and talk about some questions from our listeners and some the current promotions from our sponsors. Those of you who were expecting an interview with David G. Schwartz and Jeffrey Compton, we were planning on doing that today. We did tape that interview, and there were technical glitches, so we're going to have to do that at some time later.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I hope our audience can bear with us. I know that the quality of the audio has been rocky since we left the radio station, but I am learning as we go, and hopefully it will. We've solved the problems, and it'll continue to get better.
All right, good. The first thing I want to talk about is politics. Politics aren't normally a subject for our show, except when it applies to gambling, primarily because we don't want hate mail from whatever side we're not talking about, and you can beat the casinos whoever you vote for. But this year's presidential election has been like none other. Donald Trump has had an exceptionally bad week for himself politically. It now appears definitely possible and maybe even probable that he will announce that running for president is for losers, and since he's not a loser and the election is rigged anyway, he'll drop out of the race. His campaign says absolutely this is not going to happen. But the reason I'm bringing this up is this makes for a very interesting betting proposition, especially among a pool of people. Namely, pick the date Trump drops out of the race. Now, there's going to be people who don't think he's going to run out of the race, and for those people, pick the number of electoral votes he's going to end up with. Somebody's going to win the pool. Personally, I think that would make for an intriguing bet among a group of people, office workers or something. Richard?
Yeah, I have not seen any odds posted at Betfair or anything yet on that. It's certainly interesting fodder for discussion about what would actually happen if somebody did drop out of the race. You know, I mean, personally, I would bet against him doing it, but you never know what's going to happen.
You would bet him staying in the race?
Yeah.
You would
I would not expect him to drop out of the race.
All right. So in that pool, you would have to pick a number of electoral votes. So, but, oh well. But I would think there would be people who do expect him to drop out of the race. So,
yeah.
We'll see. All right. Let's talk something else. Taj Mahal, Atlantic City, is closing soon. The board of directors said it's losing millions of dollars a month, and it is being struck by the union, and since it sees no path to profitability, it's going to close its doors next month. The union says employees need at least 60 days notice, which means October. We'll see. Leaving aside whose fault this is possibly an opportunity for players. During the last few weeks before the closure, it would be typical if employees were disgruntled and decided to be not so vigilant at game protection. So, under this theory, APs should hit them hard. Now, personal experience, which is 20 years old or so, more than that, way back when the Dunes was closing to later be imploded and build the Bellagio in that spot, I was a small-time blackjack player and decided to play more aggressively since I figured it didn't matter. Sure enough, 2 days before closure, I was kicked out. Perfect. I was congratulating myself. I got the most out of the situation. However, the guy who kicked me out immediately went to work for the Aladdin, where I also played. He definitely recognized me, came over and said, "The rules about who we can kick out over here are different, but I know who you are, and I'll be watching." Now, all of a sudden, I thought my earlier aggression at the Dunes wasn't so well thought out. So, Richard, do you have any thoughts on this or experience in this area?
Yeah, no, I thought the same way you did, in the past, and I came to the same conclusion that you came to, that people in the casino business, especially here in Vegas, just literally just move across the street. They lose one job and go get another one. So, you don't want to make yourself well-known by being too blatant. So, yeah, no, I have the same conclusion you do.
The Atlantic City might be different. There's already many, many thousands of unemployed casino workers from closures last year. So, like, I think 4 casinos closed last year. And then this one adds another couple thousand casinos. So there's less of a chance that a particular person who threw you out is going to find immediate reemployment. So that might change the odds a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's talk about a couple of blackjack questions sent in from listeners. These are going to go from Richard to Richard because I'm not a blackjack player currently. First of all, when does Richard think is the best time to play blackjack? Should you play when it's crowded and you blend in more, or should you play when it's quiet, getting better game conditions but possibly more scrutiny?
Boy, this is one of those things that it depends on a lot of things. It depends on the casino. It depends on your bet level. And it depends on what exactly you're trying to accomplish. So, for example, if you were just a card counter and you felt like there was not a lot of heat, for maybe you're a low stakes card counter and you're below the radar of that particular casino, well, then the best time to play is when it's the slowest, you know, graveyard or, you know, midweek in the morning or things like that. You know, if you're someone who maybe does a little bit of counting, but you keep your spread really low and you bet a lot and you're getting a lot of your value from comps and things like that, then you would be much better off betting when it's as busy and as crowded and when there's as much action as possible. So like all things, the answer is it depends.
So the latter, the reason you like it more when it's crowded is if you're only getting 30 bets an hour, or it's you get a whole lot more comps per bet than if you're betting 100 hands an hour.
Sure, and the bosses are much busier, and it's much harder for them to keep track of your average bet and, you know, things like that.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can be done when the boss is really busy that can aid you.
Another player also sent us an email. He's been reading Ian Anderson's book on, they're called Turning the Tables on Las Vegas, and then the more recent one is Burning the Tables in Las Vegas. And Ian recommends for cover, players should always take insurance because you're not giving up a whole lot, and the
always take insurance on a blackjack. Not always take insurance on everything.
That's what it was. Okay, I misread the question. Always take insurance on blackjack. Yeah, you certainly should yell out even money, especially if you're on a 6-5 game. I can't imagine you'll get away with it, but you might. Somebody might be asleep. So, taking insurance on blackjacks.
Now, well, yeah, actually, so Ian Anderson's second book, Burning the Tables on Las Vegas, has this strategy called the Ultimate Gambit, and it outlines a number of cover plays like that, always doubling down on 10 and 11, you know, always standing on 16. It just has a number of plays like this that cost you not a lot, but you know, bosses may be fooled by this idea that, oh, you know, he's not a good player. But this book came out 17 years ago. I think casinos are much smarter about card counting today than they were then. I don't think this is going to fool anybody for very long. And many of the casinos now evaluate blackjack players using software from the eye in the sky. And the software is going to see that you're making these plays that are not correct, but what they're also going to see is that your bet correlates with the count. and so they're just not going to, they're still going to throw you out or back you off. You know, the other and the problem with counting cards is that your edge is so small, I just don't think it's worthwhile to give up any of it with these kind of plays, because the other problem is a lot of the bosses are too stupid to know you're making a bad play, right? They see, oh, he takes even money on a blackjack. Well, most bosses think that's the right play anyway. So, yeah, so my recommendation would be to not employ those things. I mean, the most successful card counters that I know today, people that are actually out making substantial money counting cards, basically go out and put it in their face. They spread from as little as possible to as much as possible and just play until they get thrown out. And realizing from the beginning that they are going to get thrown out, and they'll just get in the car and drive down the road to the next place or to the next state or whatever. So, yeah, I would not give them any of this in cover.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Richard. And our listeners, enjoy the interview with Nick Dunham.
Our guest today is Nick Dunham, successful daily fantasy sports player, CEO of RotoWar, a company that creates tools to help you succeed at DFS. Nick Dunham, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, guys.
First of all, your handle. It's a number one, a little U-C-R-O-R. It looks like a typographical error to me. How did that handle come about, and how do you pronounce it?
So the handle is actually pronounced lucror, and it is a Latin word meaning to win or to profit. And the reason there's a one in front of it is because when FanDuel first got started, they were ordered in alphabetical order in the lobby. So if you had a one in your name, you'd be at the top of the lobby, which would allow me to get kind of more action than somebody that was lower down in the list.
So did that evolve into people having 111 or AAA in there to start?
Oh yeah, yeah, it got a little crazy. People were doing 0000, and eventually FanDuel caught on and changed the way that they sort the lobby.
But you're stuck with your name.
I'm stuck with it. Yep.
All right. So you're an accountant and a data analyst by education and work experience. You gave up a lucrative job at Deloitte in order to pursue daily fantasy sports as both a player and CEO of RotoWar. Is that still looking like a good decision for you?
Yeah. I mean, financially and lifestyle-wise, it's been one of the best decisions I've made. We've seen success over the last 3 years, which I've been playing full-time for 3 years now, and it definitely beats doing tax work, so I can't complain.
Sitting in a cubicle. Although
right,
you're probably
yep.
sitting in front of computer screens anyway all day, right?
That's true.
Now daily?
Could we talk
ahead.
About RotoWar and there's RotoWar and there's RotoGrinders. Are those two related, and why the Roto?
Yeah, so the companies aren't related. We do share Roto in common, which is the first part of the name. And that came about because one of the first fantasy-style baseball leagues, they called it a rotisserie-style baseball league. And I think that just evolved into fantasy sports. And people kind of adopted rotisserie and turned it into Roto. And now there's tons of sites that have Roto in front of it.
That always confused me. Okay, now I understand. So what is RotoWar? What does RotoWar do?
So RotoWar basically takes the models that I've developed over the past 3 full years of doing this and makes them available to our paid subscribers. So they basically can come in, have access to the exact same tools, basically, that I look at on a daily basis, and it helps walk them through the process of creating winning lineups so that they can be successful in daily fantasy sports.
But wouldn't that cut into, aren't you creating competition for yourself if you're giving them the same tools?
There would be a certain level where that would come into play. And I guess at that point, if we have that many users, I would probably increase the price. I guess long term, it's going to be a balancing act. You wouldn't want to saturate the market with, too many people using your system. But we definitely haven't reached that point yet.
Daily fantasy sports hasn't been in the news so much recently as it was a year ago. Last fall, Nevada and New York decided to ban daily fantasy sports from their states, and many other states were considering similar moves. Apparently, daily fantasy sports is back in New York, at least temporarily. What is the status of DFS across the country today?
I guess with all that news that had come out, there was definitely some scary points in time for those of us that make a living in this industry. But with the recent legislation in New York, it feels like the momentum has shifted in our favor. And I think, you know, they thoughtfully wrote the legislation, and it makes a fair playing field for everyone. And it allows the states to generate revenue if they're letting these operators do business there. If it continues to go that direction, I think the future of daily fantasy sports is really good. And New York was a huge win for us. There's a couple more states, specifically Illinois and Texas, that I think they've kind of changed their focus to, and hopefully they'll follow suit and we'll be completely back in those states as well.
Now, last fall, you posted a Business Insider video on the RotoWar Facebook page. And anybody today can go to Facebook and RotoWar and they'll can find it. Now, this video interviews you as someone who made mid six figures from daily fantasy sports in 2014. It also interviews Ed Miller, a frequent guest on Gambling with an Edge, and he claimed something like 1.3% of players earn more than 90% of the money in daily fantasy sports. And to Miller, this means the model is unsustainable. Has anything changed since then with respect to the way DFS is structured?
I think the part of that statistic that's missing is what percentage of the amount wagered is also from that group of people. Because from my experience, those of us that do this at a high volume are also wagering a lot. We've been profitable long term, but there's also professionals that aren't, as profitable or have had some profitable seasons and some unprofitable seasons. So I would say that number, that 93% of the, or 90% of the money is going to the top 1%. I would imagine that it's conversely, they're also wagering a high percentage of the money that's wagered in total. And I think, you know, there's some changes that obviously need to happen for this to be a sustainable model, but it's still in such a high growth phase that I think the current model is going to be okay for the short term.
Well, I think short term is right. I mean, if more than 90% of the players are losing consistently, I just can't see them to continue to play. Very much were you a poker player by any chance before you got into DFS? Were you an online player or?
A little bit. I wasn't, I didn't do it professionally.
I know a lot of the DFS pros came out of poker, but, you know, when online poker first started, there was a bit of it grew tremendously, but it kind of was the same problem that so many players got eaten up so quickly that they were losing them. And it'd be interesting to know what would have happened to online poker if Black Friday hadn't happened, because I don't think it could continue to grow. They were starting to try to make some changes, but the DFS industry knows this is a problem. Are they trying to do anything to correct it?
Yeah, I mean, the sites are starting to offer beginner and intermediate leagues, which people like myself cannot enter into. They've also implemented like a badging system, so you know the experienced players and the inexperienced players. And they have for a long time, they've had contest entry limits, which restrict the amount of contests that one individual can enter into.
Do they restrict the number of lineups that you can put into a...
Yeah, so certain contests, you're restricted to the number of lineups or entries that you can put into that contest. And I think rules like that are going to continue to come out as different states pass legislation. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something they're aware of that they need to find the magic recipe for. You have to keep the player ecosystem healthy or your business is going to decline. So I'm sure the answer to that question will evolve consistently over time, but there's a lot of smart guys running FanDuel and DraftKings, and I'm sure they're up to the challenge.
Now, at one point, FanDuel and DraftKings were rumored to be merging. Number one, do you think that's going to happen? And number two, if it did happen, would it be good for players?
So I think now that the legal uncertainty in New York has kind of cleared up, I would be really surprised to see the two of them merge. I think that was potentially a fallback plan if some of these larger states ended up not passing legislation, because, I mean, from what I've heard, the sites are dumping a ton of money into legal fees on a monthly basis, and that's part of the reason why you're probably not seeing too much of the advertising. But yeah, I mean, I think now that that's kind of going the right way, I wouldn't expect them to merge. And if they did, I think that it would be bad from a player perspective.
Why?
Because, I mean, that would be the definition of a monopoly. Not that our industry is big enough for anybody to step in, but I mean, that would be, you know, that would be pretty much, I mean, the two biggest by far. I mean, it would be like 95% of the revenue in the industry would pretty much go to that one company, which would allow them to pretty much do anything they want.
Yeah, competition is always better for the players. And you're right. I think they learned a valuable lesson that they should be spending less money on commercials and more money on lobbyists. And, you know, if they continue to spend a lot of money on lobbyists, they should be able to get these things, you know, these laws passed in their favor. So,
okay, you mentioned we haven't seen many ads yet recently, and part of that is the biggest ads you would see for DFS were in football season, and that's around the corner. Now, those ads last year caused certain states to ban DFS. They seemed to imply it wasn't gambling. All you had to do was send in your money and become a millionaire. Now, presumably, if they have those same ads this year, the states are going to respond badly again. What does your crystal ball tell you what the ads are going to be like this year?
You know, I think that they're going to probably, I mean, there's definitely not going to be as many of them in the first place. And I think that they're going to be more focused on the experience of how exciting it is to, you know, draft a team in one day and see how your players are doing and how exciting it is to go to these live events that they offer and, you know, kind of play off of the once in a lifetime experiences that you can get playing daily fantasy sports. And I think they'll probably, you know, get away from I'm, you know, whoever and I made such and such playing on FanDuel this year. You know, I would be very surprised if we continued to see advertising like that.
All right. Baseball. We're airing this show in early August. Baseball season's about 60% of the way done. How is betting, well, how is playing DFS under these conditions different than it would be at the beginning of the year or right at the playoff push time?
I mean, at the beginning of the year, you have more users that are, you know, experimenting, that maybe have never played fantasy baseball before. And it seems like there's definitely more people playing at the beginning of the season because it's, you know, right after football gets done and basketball gets done. So people are still kind of in the mode of playing those sports and they need something else to kind of fill that void. So the, you know, the action that you get at the beginning of the year is definitely better than the action you get in the second half of the season. And, you know, really at this point, it just becomes a grind. Like the people that are still playing have been more than likely playing the entire season. And, you really just have to keep your game sharp and, make sure to not do anything stupid and kind of survive till football starts.
Is football the best revenue for you? Is that where the most money is made for you?
Yes. Historically, that has been my best
sport.
And
is that because the volume is so much bigger or just because you think the edge is bigger in football?
I think that it's because there's so many people playing daily fantasy football in comparison to the other sports. The action that you're getting is not really against experienced players, and you can still manage to get a lot of money out on a weekly basis. Whereas, you know, with baseball and basketball, it's a very limited amount that you can get out and expect to have a positive return.
Now, a lot of the kind of, well, before I get to that, how math-based is your system? I mean, have you built a regression model or is it?
I definitely use regression quite a bit, in all of my models. And I would say the most math driven model is the baseball model. I mean, with baseball, you could almost build a model and not watch any baseball the entire season and probably have pretty close to the same results as you would by watching every single game. Whereas I would say that basketball is probably opposite of that. The model that I've built for basketball is fairly simple from a math standpoint. But I spend a lot of time watching games, so that I can learn how the coaches are distributing minutes and what the rotations are and what do they do when their team is winning by 15 points or losing by 15 points? Who do they rest more than, you know, and who's going to get more minutes in those situations? So there's a lot of things in basketball that are subjective, whereas baseball, your position in the lineup is probably not going to change. You may get pinch hit for, but, you can do research on how often somebody's pinch hit for. But outside of that, I mean, it's very statistics driven.
And a lot of these, I mean, these skills are the same skills that would go into beating traditional sports betting. So have you tried to apply this to just beating the line?
I think in basketball, there's been several times where I've determined that a line is extremely inefficient. But being in Colorado, there's not really a legal sports betting outlet for me. And I don't want to do anything that could, negatively impact the stuff that I'm doing with DFS. So I'm trying to keep it completely legal.
Yeah, no, I get that. And plus the whole DFS, I mean, I've almost found the whole we're not gambling thread pretty ridiculous, but I understand that they I don't know, I are trying to sell that to, you know, the people who live in Utah or something. But yeah, I can understand if you're making good money at DFS, you want to stay clean and able to do that.
Right.
All right, let's take a brief break from Nick and hear about our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In August, all of the promotions will be for those who already get mailers. It's an unusual move for them. They decided to further invest in their most loyal customers rather than opening up the promotions to all comers. The new semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, August 10th at noon, that's next week, and will go through early October. This time they'll be held in the Silverado Lounge, which is immediately outside of Don Vito's Italian restaurant. At the Palms, from now until the end of August, they have Saturday night drawings at 7:15 p.m. Winners share $10,000 each night. Every day, Monday through Friday, you can swipe to receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP Play for Prizes. Through August 12th, you earn Best Buy gift cards. These are Monday through Friday only. From August 15th through the 26th, you earn Macy's gift cards. Prizes are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep your points. In August, every Sunday, you earn double points on video poker, 10 times points on reels and video reels, no limit. On Wednesdays, 500 points earned you a free car wash. On Tuesdays, same number of points earned you a free Brendan movie ticket that does not expire. The last week in August, Monday through Friday, you get mystery multipliers. For video poker, that means 2x or 3x. You're limited to 80,000 bonus points, which means if you get a 2x multiplier, you can play 80,000 points that day and get them doubled. If you get a 3x multiplier, you can play 40,000 points that day and get them tripled. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. Game of the week is Split Poker, which is a 10 coins per line game where periodically on either the draw or the deal, you receive a split card. Split card is two cards in the space of one. A split card can be any card in the deck and is always accompanied in the same space by another card of the same suit, either the same rank, one higher, or one lower. For example, if you receive the seven of clubs as your split card, that card would equally likely be accompanied as a seven of clubs, eight of clubs, seven of clubs, six of clubs, or seven of clubs, seven of clubs. If you end up with five of a kind, the return is 5,000 coins.
Let's get back to Nick.
Well, on the skill versus luck, now I think the main reason DFS people insist it's games of skill is because that's where their legal exemption occurs. There are certain laws that say you can have games of skill, but you can't have games, you can't have gambling. Clearly it's both. The good players win most of the time in DFS, which implies there's a lot of skill involved. And all the legal elements of gambling are also present, which are consideration, chance, and prize. This is true in poker. This is true in blackjack, video poker.
Yeah, but then why isn't poker legal? If, you know, that's clearly a game of skill.
That's the whole point. DFS doesn't want to be linked there. So they make the silly argument that it's only a game of skill and hope that gets around them. Clearly, they're both. They're skill-based in there and there's gambling in there. Luke Core, do you dispute this?
Well, I can see the argument on both sides, but the best example I can give is if the number one poker player in the world sat down with somebody who never played cards before and learned, you know, say they had a a little cheat sheet next to them that told them what the hands were. There's a potential for them to win fairly often, probably, in fact, if they just get delicate cards, which is completely up to chance. Whereas if somebody completely random off the street played me, I would go with basketball, because I think basketball is the game that takes the most skill. And they played me one day in daily fantasy basketball, I think I would beat them 9 out of 10 times.
Well, but if you took the same example with the poker player and made it a freeze out, not like they're playing one hand, but you said, okay, we're each going to start with 100 chips and play until one person has them all, I would say the good poker player is going to win at least as often, if not more.
You think 90% of the time? I feel like with cards,
if it's a freeze out?
I mean,
yeah, if it's a freeze out and they were starting with, you know, they each start with, you know, some fixed bankroll and they have to play until one person has them all. Yeah, I would expect the good poker player to beat the novice 90% of the time.
Well, the poker player has to be convinced it's worth his time. Now, if this was $100 and it was going to take an hour and a half, you know, Phil Ivey wouldn't waste his time with me. But if Phil Ivey and I were doing it for $100,000...
No, but we're talking about a way of trying to measure the amount of skill involved. You know what I mean? And so if you could set this up in a lab and put Phil Ivey against the novice in a freeze-out, I think he's going to win 90% of the time or more.
I certainly wouldn't bet against him.
You know, it really would depend on how deep the stacks are, right? I mean, if they have 100 chips and their blinds are 10-20, then yeah, the amateur would have a better chance. But if they have
I guess my example is more like if you're just going to a family poker game, you kind of get all these people of different skill levels. You get the person that's never played before, and then somebody who's played in their family game every month on that day for like 10 years. And it seems like, the person that they bring that have never played before, it's like that person always ends up doing well in my experience. Like I know that that's not a,
yeah, no, I see a what
good
you're saying.
Sample
but
size
me,
or anything, but
let me ask
I mean?
You this. If Whereas we took if, the novice against you in a head to head, do you still think you'd beat him 90% of the time?
In basketball, if all they did was pick players, like they just went in and built a team without looking at anything, then yeah.
Yeah,
what if
it was football?
Football, not as much. The reason I say with basketball is because the starting lineups are never really released at a specific time, and there's tons of late scratches in NBA. So if you were a novice person playing NBA, you're going to end up rostering, like more than likely you're going to end up rostering somebody that doesn't play that night. And then if you're not familiar with the rotations, you're probably going to roster people that aren't starting. And the projection expectation for me, say for basketball last season, was somewhere around 290 points. And if you started somebody who was only going to play 15 minutes and then you had another person that wasn't going to play, I would probably be projected to get 40% more than you. And that's just a huge hurdle to overcome, especially in a game where players do perform very consistently night in, night out. Like, you're not going to have a LeBron James come in and score 0 points in 35 minutes in a game. He's going to have a pretty consistent floor and a pretty consistent ceiling. So in basketball, there's just a ton of skill involved. Now, if you were comparing that to baseball, I would say that baseball is very similar to poker. Somebody could come in if they knew who, you know, if they put people in the game that were starting or even not starting, any given day they would have a chance to beat me in baseball.
You know, I wanted to go back to the poker analogy for a bit. In online poker, pros would get rake back. Is there anything like that for the top pros in DFS?
There's nothing special that we receive. I mean, anything that we get from the sites is offered to all their players. And it's not even, Like, I remember playing on PokerStars where they had the tiered rankings and you would receive different things based on your level. And there's not really anything like that going on outside of you qualifying for higher level free rolls. But it's definitely not as drastic as it was in online poker.
You have a buddy on your site, name of Condia, appears to be Asian. You and he came to Vegas not so long ago. We're playing blackjack at the Planet Hollywood. What happened?
We were just out, I guess 2 weekends ago, and we were playing in the high limit room, playing $100 two-deck blackjack that had pretty good rules. And we were sitting at the table for about an hour, and we were actually getting ready to leave, and the casino floor manager came up and asked us if we were staying there. We said no, and then she said, okay, well, we don't ever want to see you here again. You're being trespassed. This gentleman's going to walk you to the cage so you can cash your chips in, and then they're going to escort you off the property. And we were kind of like, okay, well, you know, what's going on? And they wouldn't, so they just said, we don't want your action here, and this is how it's going to be.
But did you have to give them your name?
I didn't. I think it's because we were using players' cards. They didn't really ask us for that stuff. They already had it all.
Uh-huh. So,
yeah.
And so did that,
yeah.
Were you planning to play in some of the WSOP events, and that threw a monkey wrench into that? Is that right?
Yeah, Charles had already bought into the main event for that weekend, and that was being hosted at the Rio, which is also owned by Caesars.
Yes,
and
it
we
is.
Were in, yeah, and we were informed that we were not only banned from Planet Hollywood, but all Caesars properties. So we went over to the Rio to talk to the manager or one of the managers at the World Series of Poker about our situation. And they said after talking to casino management, they weren't going to let, Charles compete in the main event. So they refunded the entry fee and escorted us off that property.
That is so stupid. Jesus. And now I assume you were counting cards, so is that something that you had been doing for a long time, or was this something you learned recently, or how much blackjack have you played?
I started counting cards, I guess, probably 6 years ago, and mainly just to do, you know, as a way to have an advantage when I'm going on trips to Vegas or to the casinos in Colorado. I like to have an edge in any game that I'm playing, so it seemed logical for me to learn how to count cards, and had never really had an issue with it because I think up until that point, I really played pretty low stakes, maybe $10 or $25 games, and I never really spread very much. So my normal spread was maybe one to 10 units max, and we were doing... let's see. We were spreading like 1 to 20 units
on a double deck game.
Yeah,
that's not going to go
My
over.
My friend,
well.
You were asking for it.
I know. Yeah, I know. So yeah, that was lesson learned, I guess.
Although okay, sometimes they let people back into the World Series of Poker after a while.
Yeah, I mean you have to pay a pretty hefty. Not just the entry fee, but you pay some juice to the house too, right?
They refunded everything. I mean, the only thing we didn't get refunded was the, I guess, travel expenses that we incurred to get out there.
No, I mean, the Rio is losing that, or Caesars is losing that money, by not allowing him to play poker. They're losing, you know, the revenue they would have received from that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And why would they care if you're a blackjack card counter? It's like they don't really care who wins the event. A lot of professional players play.
Yeah, they're lots of card counters playing in the World Series of Poker.
Or even professional poker players, which is, okay. Also on your Facebook, you have a video of Condia, who was being interviewed in the middle of a important tournament, and he was in third place or something at the time and ended up with cashing for $1 million. But at the time he was being interviewed, they asked him when he slept. And his answer was, he slept during the games. And all the rest of the time he was working and trying to fill out stuff. But when the game happens, there was nothing he could really do during the game. So he slept. Now, my guess is, I mean, all the DFS advertising is how exciting it is to watch the games when you have these lineups there and everything. But that's when he chose to sleep. Is he weird, or is that
well? I think that's a given, Bob.
is that common among the top players? Of what actually happens during the game is just numbers and not that exciting, and or what?
I think that's uncommon. First, I don't know how he manages to sleep during the games because. I mean, for me, it's more of like, you're nervous about what you put out there and you want to see the results. But for some reason, he finds it easier to sleep and then wake up and see what happened rather than kind of sweat the games live. And you know, sometimes I'm envious of that. But when we have a really good week, I still find a lot of joy in watching the games. So.
Well, and you said you get information from the games, at least in basketball, that you need, right?
Correct. Usually he watches replays of the majority of the games, so he just doesn't watch them live.
Yeah, that's much more efficient. You can fast forward through them.
Correct, yeah.
Do you have any other gambling projects outside of DFS?
No, not at the moment.
Very good. We've been talking to Nick Dunham, also known as Lucror, spelled strangely. And we've been talking a lot about daily fantasy sports today. Thank you very much, Nick. It's a pleasure to have you on Gambling with an Edge.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Please check out our page, gamblingwithanedge.com. We welcome your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. Or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. If you'd like the show delivered to you automatically every week, you can do that. You can sign up at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. Or if you would like to see an archive of every episode ever done, you can find that at bobdancer.com. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Bob. Good night.